system of divine metaphysics and its relationship to mathematics. The system of divine metaphysics includes the elements which are included in the definition of God as defined in Science and Health, the textbook of Christian Science, by Mary Baker Eddy. There are many definitions of God depending on the different focus that Mary Baker Eddy is directing our attention to review, but the one I'm going to use is from Recapitulation, realizing that chapters 1 through 13 describe in detail the elements of Christian Science, and chapter 14 is a summary of chapter 1 through 13, and that chapter 15 through 18 are the key to the scriptures, which is the key to the elements. But we want to look at the elements, for that is the best way that we can analyze and try to piece together exactly what the system of divine metaphysics is about. We may call this the first phase of the system of divine metaphysics. For the system of divine metaphysics is just like God, it is infinite, and Mary Baker Eddy was cluing us into that by her final illustration in her masterpiece, Christ and Christmas. For Christ and Christmas entails all of Christian Science, but it takes a lot of digging, translation and interpretation, which has to be done with spiritual inspiration before one can even begin to approach what the few words that are in there and the enormous meaning that is behind each of the illustrations, even the blank one. The definition in chapter 14, page 465, says that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The seven last words of that definition are the synonymous terms for God, and the first four connect us to the system of Christian Science by giving us examples of the operators. There are four operators, which are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And they're represented in this particular definition with the incorporeal representing the Word, divine representing the Christ, supreme representing Christianity, and infinite representing Science. Mathematics has 10 digits of 0 through 9, and it has four operators also, which are termed add, subtract, multiply, and divide. If one utilizes the addition operator, they find that 3 plus 4 equals 7, but 3 times 4 equals 12. Now, if one states that 3 plus 4 equals 8, or 6, or any number besides 7, it is an error. If one used that error in building a tall building, such as an architect might be responsible for doing, in terms of the calculations that are involved, then there would be big trouble. In fact, the building probably wouldn't get up very many floors because it would probably fall over. So if one intends to add, they cannot be using the multiplying function, and vice versa, with divide or subtract. If one desires to find out about what God is, which is the purpose of the operator of the word, they cannot be studying the Christ and get the correct answer. So the correct operator in both mathematics and the system of divine metaphysics have to be correct, otherwise the product is full of holes. It is going to be erroneous, and it's going to be coming up with the wrong product, the wrong conclusion, the wrong solution. If one thinks that they should be thinking about the Christ as incorporeal, they're also going to get the wrong product, because incorporeal belongs to the Word, not to the Christ. One must have the foundation of what the Word is all about before they move on to utilizing the operator of the Christ. Otherwise, they're going to be utilizing the operator of the Christ with little or no understanding. Also, in the sequence of development, one must have it in the proper order. In other words, we must know about God, which is a study of the Word, before we try to translate any situation that comes our way. Mary Baker Eddy refers to what comes our way in a letter written to a student under the title of Vision, and she says, "Are you able to focus no matter what comes your way?" Well, she means focusing on the truth, and the truth is one of the terms to define God. We can't focus on the truth if we don't even know what truth is. And looking only in the dictionary is not going to give us the whole picture. Although I must say that that is a very important beginning. Mary Baker Eddy quotes Webster, who wrote the 1828 dictionary, frequently, and we must use it as our guideline for the true definition, as spiritually as what one can get from a standard dictionary, by utilizing the 1828 dictionary by Noah Webster. Noah Webster also quotes biblical verses frequently throughout the entire dictionary. Just as we cannot get the right answer if we want to add 3 and 4 by using the multiplier, we cannot get the right answer in the system of divine metaphysics by utilizing the function of the Christ without knowing what the function of the Word educates us about the various synonymous terms for God. John Morgan points out that we cannot even think about trying to educate ourselves on what the Word is, which means a study of the seven synonymous terms, unless we are at the point in our experience where we realize that a material sense of life, truth, and intelligence in matter is not getting us where we want to go. When we get to the point in consciousness that we want to elevate our entire being, then we are ready to approach the function of the Word, which is a study of the definitions, the true nature of God. In other words, we can't study about God if we're going to view God as a person. if we're going to view God as a physical body, if we're going to view God as someone that will listen to us because we are all knowing and God needs to have education from us. We can't study God effectively unless we acknowledge that God is above us. As a matter of fact, God is at the top. There is nothing, no one, or any concept that is any higher than what God is. The buck stops at the top, and that's where God is. God is the apex. In fact, as Mr. Rossin stated in a wonderful instantaneous healing that he had in healing someone else from being underneath a load of rocks that had been dumped on him accidentally, Mr. Rossin stated that there is nothing but God. So not only is God at the apex, but God is the entire triangle. In other words, the entire structure of everything that exists is God. Obviously, this reference is not to any kind of a material structure, even though something that appears to be material could be a symbol for the true nature of God. On page 146 of Science and Health, Mary Baker Eddy refers to divine metaphysics and the system mentioned so far in this recording as follows. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Now, if somebody doesn't get the clue that they better do research on what this system is all about, then they are blind, deaf, and dumb. One is not ready to even think about the system if they don't realize the importance of this dramatic statement by Mary Baker Eddy. And sadly, probably a good 99%+ of those who study Christian Science or call themselves Christian Scientists don't even have a clue that that sentence is in the textbook, let alone the importance of it. This is one of the many reasons why there has been a dramatic collapse of the churches of Christian Science. It has been splintered from top to bottom. There are other reasons that we will not touch on in this particular treatment, only to say that there are many reasons why very few people know who Mary Baker Eddy is and what the words Christian Science mean, or even that Christian Science used to be one of the prolific religions throughout the world, and certainly was the fastest growing. Another extremely significant reason for the collapse of the recognition that Christian Science even exists is the absent testimonies of healing that give credit to Mary Baker Eddy, or credit where it should be in many other areas relating to Christian Science. But that's all that will be touched on regarding this subject in this treatment. So what do these four terms really mean? The Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And what are some of the key words to describe mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? Starting with the synonymous terms for God, which again comes from just the first operator, which is the word, because that is the study of the terms of God and the nature of God, and should be the very beginning of our study of Christian Science. If one would examine Genesis 1, they would find that it is in a very specific order of development, starting off with light. In other words, without light, there can be no beginning. Light represents the original idea. Also, I want to point out one other item, and that is that there are seven significant phases of development described in Genesis chapter 1 through the first three verses of chapter 2. In each one of those seven steps, in the order of development, there is a reference to us. It says, let us do this. Let us do that. And it says it seven times, one with each of the seven primary functions of the development. And then it says, God did this or that. So the first step is, we have to open our thought and let the development take place. In other words, we have to be receptive to the development in individual consciousness, our individual consciousness. Don't be concerned about someone else's. Take care of our own individual consciousness. I was in a church on a Wednesday evening, and a lady stood up and gave a testimony. She was a practitioner, and she said that she got a call from one of her patients. I don't know whether it was a new patient or whatever, but she said that after they explained what the problem was and they hung up the phone, she knew the first thing to do was to purify her consciousness to know that that problem could not even be real. So in other words, she had to cleanse any possession of reality connected to the problem. That was step number one. She says, I can't even begin to help someone until I clear my own consciousness of whatever they told me the problem was, and that it could be real. That attracted me to her, and we ended up being friends for several decades, until the time that she went on to another dimension. By the way, I was not in touch with her at the time that she passed, but there was a moment in my life that I had an influx of ideas that she had been explaining to me for all the years that we had the relationship of her being a practitioner and I being a patient, or at least my business was a patient. But at one moment in my life, it's like the floodgates were open and everything came to me that she had been telling me all those years. I don't know for sure, but I think that that was probably the moment that she passed on. I can imagine her saying, here it is, take it all, chew it up, it's yours. It's uniquely for you, and I'm giving it to you. I had the same thing that happened when my mother passed. It all came as like a computer dump, which means that you're taking all the data and you're putting it into a special place all at once. So, number one, we have to be in a position to let the leaven of truth work on our consciousness to neutralize any error and to embed in it the truth. So that's the first step in any treatment, whether we are treating ourselves or we're being an assistant for someone else. We have to let in the truth, and we have to neutralize any belief that there is reality in what the problem appears to be. And we also must realize that the symptom may be totally off the mark on what the real problem is. Evil is very deceptive. Today's political climate is a wonderful example in the study of the operation of evil. And we can see that evil accuses truth, or a symbol of truth, can be an individual, or it can be a set of goals for improvement of the country. But the first thing that it does is it tries to degrade anyone who comes forth with statements of truth. It fabricates lies that have nothing to do with reality, gives it to the media, and says, "Would you please publish this?" They publish it, and of course they never disclose their source because they say that's privileged information for journalism. And then the journalist uses that as the authority for the authenticity of degrading the individual or the set of agendas or whatever it is. And of course, the whole thing was fabricated from beginning to end. They just made up lies and accusations, and it was exactly what they were doing themselves. In other words, evil accuses truth of being evil. And in the same methods that evil practices it. So that's why we have to be very careful in our analysis, which Mary Baker Eddy says is the first step in healing, is to analyze, to find the error, and then we have to expose it. Then we have to eradicate it. Then we can start working on the truth. So we have to eradicate the evil first. Then we affirm the truth. And the truth we affirm must be the exact counterfact to the evil. When Jesus was being tempted after being in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, the devil would tempt him with a certain thing, and he would respond not by arguing. He wouldn't react, but he would respond by merely stating a truth that was an exact quote out of the Bible. When Mary Baker Eddy was accused of being prayerless by the media, she didn't argue with them. She didn't say, "Why in the world would you say such a thing as that? I do this, this, and this, and you ought to know that." No, she didn't even mention that she was accused of being prayerless. She simply said, "I pray three times a day." And then she described it a little bit, saying that with her face pointed toward the New Jerusalem, of course, that's the children of Israel, not the Zionists, because Zionist represents evil. Children of Israel represent the children that struggled in the desert and began to realize that they needed to rely on God for their supply. They're the ones that got everything they needed, whether it was water or food or shelter from the sun with a cloud. Whatever it was, they depended on God. And then, and only then, were they able to go into the kingdom of God and be the real children of Israel. It is not surprising, but you should know that people lump Jews all in one big bag. But there is a major, major difference, because there are Christian Jews who believe in what Christ Jesus did, and there are Zionists. And you can imagine which ones are the white hats and which ones have a different color on their hat. It's like everything in humanity. There are good guys and bad guys. There are guys who are striving to be Christ-like, and there are the ones who are enjoying what they think is a life of pleasure by having a sense of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Like any class one would take in school or a university, there are those that have a 4.0 grade, and there are those who fail, and the bulk are in between. We need to be striving for the 4.0. In other words, the purity. We need to be striving for recognizing spirit as our only substance, and spirit is flawless. Okay, getting back to just a few terms that describe or are some of the key words for each of the seven synonymous terms. In mind, mind is the beginning because it represents the idea, which is the beginning. And of course, that comes because of the creative ability. And with creative ability comes the ability to bring it forth, which means that it has to have the capacity, it has to have the functionality, the capability, it has to have the facility, and it has to be coupled with action, and it has to have the intelligence and the wisdom and the knowing. So if you couple all of those together, then we can end up with a production which ends up being power. And it's just like an engine of a car. It used to be, not so much now, but it used to be that you would buy a car based on its horsepower, because they would make that a big advertisement. It was a horsepower race between the car manufacturers. But that power was static when it was sitting there in the engine on the showroom floor. It was only power when it was being utilized. The same with the power of mind. It means nothing unless it is being utilized. So when one would couple all of those words that were just described with action, then it would produce power. And of course, the total power of everything is with God, because God is infinite. So God is omnipotent, which means the one, only, and all power. And in the definition of good, which is in the glossary, chapter 17 of Science and Health, it says that the definition of good is omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Omniscience is what includes the intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. And that's a part of mind. Omniaction is a part of mind. And obviously, omnipotence is a part of mind. Omnipresence is shared by all of qualities of God, because God is omnipresent, so that means every part of God is omnipresent. Substance is described as being spirit. Spirit means the opposite of matter. We know that matter doesn't have any eternal nature. It's nothing of real substance. So the opposite has to be the real substance. And real substance is flawless, transparent, and therefore reflective. And spirit interacts with all the other qualities as the mind. So in other words, the substance of mind is spirit. And the power of spirit is because of mind. The third one is soul, and soul is sense. And since spirit is the only substance, the only senses are spiritual senses. That means that seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, if we want to do reality instead of materiality, then we have to be utilizing the spiritual senses in order to identify the seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. And on page 587, Mary Baker Eddy defines God as the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. It's on the same page that she defines good, which was already enumerated and recited. So the next one in line after mind, spirit, and soul is principle. Principle represents system and structure. Now, it couldn't be a very good system and structure unless it were in balance and harmonious. So those are two very key terms to describe principle in addition to system and structure. Now, what is the substance of principle? What has to be the only substance there is, which is spirit. What is the sense that lets us know and identify the true principle? Well, that has to be soul. So you see, the soul, which is spiritual, has to be helping us to identify the real principle versus a fake. And the ideas of mind enlighten us to what the real principle is. We couldn't see it unless we had the enlightenment of mind. And we couldn't identify it unless we had the sense of soul. And it wouldn't be of any substance unless it was spiritual. So you see, all seven synonymous terms work together all the time. They interact with each other, and just like the big trees that are called the redwood sequoias in northwestern California, where below the surface, and the surface is very shallow where the roots are, the roots all bond together in one grand network. Just like every individual on earth is a brethren with every other individual. Forget seeing one as being evil and one being good. We're only interested in the spiritual nature of everything that God produced. And that means every individual. So we have to look for the spiritual qualities or the reminder to reverse our thought about what we're focusing on. Now, the next thing after principle is life. And life represents fatherhood, and it is eternal. It represents multiplication. And basically, life is exercise of all the qualities of God. So we're exercising mind, spirit, soul, and principle when we are living. And we haven't gotten to it yet, but we're also exercising truth and love. So, the exercise of all the spiritual qualities of God, and all qualities of God are spiritual because God is spirit. That is God's only substance. So exercising those qualities, that means we're really living. We're not surviving. Boy, we're living at the top of the apex because we're right there with God. Just as Christ Jesus said, I and my Father are one. That doesn't mean that he was God. What it means is that his consciousness was the consciousness of God. It was reflecting the qualities of God. He would see the perfect man instead of someone that was blind, deaf, or dumb, or leprous, or anything else that seemed to be the problem, sinful, diseased, whatever. He was always seeing the perfect man. He was at one with God when he was seeing the perfect man. So that's life. Truth is consciousness. Now, truth represents sonship. Just as life represented fatherhood, truth represents sonship. And Jesus was a perfect example of truth because he held tightly with truth. John makes the statement, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. That could be interpreted to mean, ye shall know the Christ consciousness, and the Christ consciousness will make you free because you've purified your consciousness. Just like the lady I mentioned in the church service on a Wednesday evening, she purified her consciousness. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will do the healing. The truth does the healing. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, and love don't do the healing. Truth does the healing. Truth does the healing because truth is the Christ consciousness. It is the pure consciousness that does the healing. Truth is also the motive. Imagine building a building and you want the wall to be straight. We're not talking about a curved arch for artistic reason. We're talking about, or even a roof that is built in a curve for strength because all the vectors come together. We're talking about a building where the wall is desired to be perpendicular. Well, we have to make sure that that is a true straight line. It can't have any mistake in it, any errors. It can't have any slant to it. It needs to be perpendicular to the opposite surface. That's why truth is a very important feature, very important synonymous term. And motive also has to be pure. Motive is a part of truth. So we have to have a pure motive. Just like in a court of law, they say, well, they can't convict somebody unless we can prove they had a motive that would bring about the problem that we are claiming that they are accused of. There's no proof unless they have a motive that matches what the crime was. After truth, the only one left, you guessed it, L-O-V-E. And what does love possibly mean? Love means the plan and design of everything. That means the plan and design of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. If you don't have love, you're lost. Just like truth. If you don't have truth in the intelligence, then you're lost. Your intelligence is muddled up with error. And we don't want error in any part of our structure. If we're thinking about building a building within our consciousness, building a structure that is permanent, it has to be of the fabric of truth. It has to be true. Well, it's really the fabric of spirit, because spirit is the substance. But it has to be true. Everything about the way we're thinking has to be true. All thoughts have to be based on truth. All actions, all vision has to be based on truth. Okay, so love is plan and design. Imagine a factory that has all these gears coming together to make something happen at the end. It could be a car engine. You know, it's got all these moving parts in there. If everything is not according to love, and love includes oil, which is spiritual inspiration, which is lubricant. In other words, there has to be lubrication in all of the parts, otherwise they'd be making a really bad clacking noise. So there has to be oil in the engine. We have to make sure that everything we do, everything we think, say, is with the atmosphere of love. Love is like an atmosphere. If we have an atmosphere of love, we don't even count how many mistakes a friend makes. Like Jesus said when his disciples asked him, how many times should someone forgive? Seven times? They probably thought of seven as being complete. But Jesus said 70 times seven, meaning don't even think about you need to forgive. I think what he's telling us is we shouldn't be condemning in the first place. We only need to forgive if we're going to condemn. Why are we condemning? Are we God? Are we the judge? Remember what Dale Carnegie said, which I've referred to in many of these treatments. He says, you better not have a very strong opinion that opposes someone else, because tomorrow you may agree with them. In other words, you may have been enlightened to some facts that they knew that you didn't know, and you may agree with them. Well, you know, they may have had a more spiritual viewpoint of something, and you may have been slanted with personal opinion. Who knows what the situation is? But Dale Carnegie says, you better tread softly and not be having an aggressive opinion about something. Jesus said, yea, yea, nay, nay. My longtime friend said, does it have to be said? Before you say something, make sure it has to be said. She said, before you make a phone call, have a list of things you want to discuss and stick to the list. Make it as brief as possible. Think about Jesus, yea, yea, nay, nay. Mary Baker Eddy has an introductory quote to chapter 14, which, as I mentioned, is the summary of the first 13 chapters and a summary of all of the elements of Christian Science. It says, and it's quoting the Bible, it says, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. She also says, don't try to make one huge step in your advancement in Christian Science. She says it is an infinite progression, is concrete being. She says that in Miscellaneous Writings, page 82. Infinite progression. So in other words, all we want to do is take a precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. We only want to take it a little step at a time. We want today to be a little bit better than yesterday. A little bit better. Try not to take any steps backwards. All steps forward. If anything, just be neutral for a moment. not go backwards. Big companies can go down by making one small mistake. I've seen it happen. I've seen little companies go down. Take years to build it, and they make one small mistake, and it ends up being a fatal mistake. If we're not sure of what to do, if it's not real clear in our thought, don't make any decision. Go study. Think about how Jesus would handle it. I remember I was attending a youth organization meeting at the university where I attended. And there was a guy that had driven all night to go somewhere to be of assistance to somebody. And when he got home, he was really exhausted. And just as he got home and was ready to collapse in bed, he got a phone call from somebody else that needed him to do something. And he said, oh, how can I do it? I am exhausted. And then the thought came to him, what would Jesus do? Well, he had a totally different attitude and he went and did it. He knew that if there was the need, he would be supplied the strength and the wisdom to do it and do it correctly. And that's what he did. He was following the Christ. Now, love, as I mentioned, is the plan and design of everything. But also it represents nurturing. So in other words, think of love as being the motherhood. Just like life was the Father, truth was the Son, represented by Christ Jesus, and love is the motherhood. That's represented by Mary Baker Eddy. So, what does a mother do? They nurture the idea. They nurture everything. If a mother has 5 children, 1 child, 10 children, it doesn't matter. She tries to nurture. It's built into the nature of the motherhood. She tries to nurture every single one based on their individuality. That's what we have to do. We have to nurture our understanding and thought, speech, and action regarding mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. We have to nurture it all. Just like when we're living the qualities of God, love means we have to be nurturing the qualities of God within our own thought, speech, and action. Are we doing that? Okay, those are the elements. Let me go through the system with the operators of the word Christ, Christianity, and science. And I've already explained the word in pretty good detail. Christ means that we have gotten an appreciation, and of course everything is infinite, so you know, no one says, oh, I know it now. In fact, one of the greatest practitioners of all time is Frederick Rawson. He's the one that healed the man, and he jumped out from underneath the pile of rocks totally unscratched. Mr. Rawson says, we know, and he probably knew more about God than any writer other than Mary Baker Eddy. But anyway, he said, we know so little about God. He said, don't even think about criticizing someone else's idea about what God is. He said, don't even think about it, because everybody knows so little about it. You better not even think about trying to judge someone else and their concept of what God is, or who God is, or anything about it. So that reminds me of the attitude that Dale Carnegie had that I've already mentioned. Don't criticize. Tomorrow you may agree with them. Yeah, not only do we not want to criticize, we don't want to try to tell God anything whatsoever. God is our source of all wisdom and all knowledge and all intelligence. What are we going to tell God? God's at the apex. The best we can hope for is that for a moment we are there thinking like God would be thinking. In fact, God's supposed to be doing all the thinking because he doesn't have to think. He knows. He's the source of all knowing, as it says in page 587. All seeing, all knowing, all acting, all wise, all loving and eternal. So, God is it. The only thing we can do is try to get our thought in alignment with God. Okay, so the Christ is translating whatever comes our way. Jesus saw a blind man. He translated it to the perfect man. And as a result, there was a healing. 12 lepers or 10 lepers. He translated it to the perfect individual. They were all healed. Only one of them appreciated it and recognized truth as being the healer. But that's not Jesus' problem. That is their problem. We cannot work out someone else's salvation. We might be able to be instrumental in having a healing be manifested in someone else, but their transformation is their problem. That is their own unfoldment. That is their own salvation they have to work out of. As a matter of fact, it's been said by Mary Baker Eddy that if someone doesn't truly transform their thought and take up the serious study of Christian Science, they will have other problems. Because all you did was to help them come over one particular problem. And if they haven't transformed their way of life, they're going to have the same problem as everyone else. And that is trying to overcome the problems of the lie upon lie about humanity. So if they are enlightened enough from that healing to really change their life and start devoting time, and I mean serious time, Richard Strain was at the end of his rope, and he went to someone who was an experienced Christian Scientist and said, "I don't know what to do." He said, "I've got all these troubles and I don't even know where to begin." And they said, "Well, how much time are you spending studying?" He says, "Well, I don't really have much time." He says, "You know, I do this, that, and whatever. And by the time the end of the day, there's only 6 hours left till I have to get up and go do it all again." And the individual told him, "If you're not studying 5 hours a day, don't even think about making progress." He said, "How am I going to do it?" She said, "That's up to you. I'm not here to work out your salvation. You came to me for advice. I gave it to you. Do with it what you want. You can throw it in the trash or you can take it seriously." He thought about it a moment. He says, "You know, he figured he didn't have any alternative. You know, he was really at the end of his rope, at the end of his rope." So he said, "Okay, I'm going to do it." By the end of the week, I don't know, I think that was a Monday or a Tuesday. By the end of the week, his life had started to turn around. There was significant improvement by the end of the week, where he had a change of his schedule, where he had more time to study without only being 1 hour a day, being, you know, more than 1 hour a day to sleep, I mean. And he ended up being a very popular speaker. I don't think he was ever on the lecture circuit, but he was a very popular speaker at various churches. So, 5 hours a day is what he did. What are you doing? Are you doing 5 minutes a day of absolute isolated study? 5 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 1 day a week, 2 days a week, every day a week? It's an individual decision. Okay, that's the Christ. We have to translate just like Jesus did. Whatever comes our way, we have to look at the spiritual nature of everything that could be involved. Okay, the third one is demonstrating. So in other words, we not only have to be changing our thought about it, but then we have to prove it. And proving it means that we have the correct understanding of some of the terms that are in the Word which describe God. And number two, we are seeing that there is a spiritual view that can be cultivated about what is coming our way in the way of a problem. And so then number three is demonstrating it, and that's Christianity. That's what Christianity is all about. It's proving that the truth works, that the truth heals. Christianity, that's what it is. And then once we demonstrate it and prove it by having a healing, then we're into the fourth step, which is science. In other words, we are living the Christ. We are living the Word. We're living Christianity. And it's natural to us. In other words, we're going to God first, not last, first. In fact, we're seeing God as the omni, meaning one, only, and all. Revelation talks about the city of God. And the city of God is defined as the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. It's defined as the north, east, south, and west. I've referred to Ralph Witzke as being one of the most advanced students of Mary Baker Eddy. He wrote many books, and they're available on our website. And book number three, I think it's two. Book number two and book number three describe the system of divine metaphysics, and he has the most advanced understanding of it, far beyond anyone else. He's taken it to levels above what anyone else has even thought of doing. And I highly recommend that you do a serious study of his books, number two and three. In particular, if you really want to be serious about what does Mary Baker Eddy mean on page 146, where she says, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus's healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present present application to the cure of disease. Well, Rolf Witzke has been so generous to let us publish his books and make them available for download for free, that you are very fortunate to be able to have it available. And by the way, I have provided, or the Institute has provided, a treatment on freedom and free. And it's brought out that really there is nothing that is ever free. You think you're getting a free email from somebody? They collect all the data on you, and they sell it, or they utilize it for marketing. They give away your identity and everything else about you, who your emails come from, who they go to, what the topics are that you discuss. They steal. They keep everything. Well, I won't say steal, because you sign an agreement, which probably no one reads, and you're basically giving them the right to all the content of everything that you do, using their service, period. So you're giving away your entire personal identity, everything about you, and you are telling them a lot. You do searches on one of the biggest search engines, you are making a huge mistake. There are other ones that they don't give away anything to anybody, and they're very good. In fact, the largest one that most people use and people quote a lot, they censor everything. You do a search on them and do a search on another one. And if you want to know another one, you just let us know. Send us a message with your phone number and we'll call you and tell you. But if you do a search on the one that everyone thinks is the best, you will find that they have blocked out probably 50% of all the good stuff. Yeah. Because it promotes truth. It promotes America for what America is supposed to stand for, the original Constitution. In fact, the Constitution of America that is followed today is not even the original Constitution. It was changed, I think it was 1891. So the original one, which was, I think, 1798 or something like that, it's down the tubes. You know, they totally replaced it. Totally replaced it. That's a whole nother topic. Not for this recording. Okay, so you know what love is. Love is nurturing all the qualities of God. And it's the wholeness, the completeness, which means that you've already got a taste of what mind is, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. And therefore, you're at the step of wholeness. Now, wholeness is only a minuscule part of wholeness, because everything about God and reality is infinite, but at least you've got a taste of it. So, that's love. And you know what the word Christ, Christianity, and science are. So, that's the purpose of this. And, something I didn't mention. Let's suppose that you're in mathematics, and you want to add two things, but instead of adding them, you make a mistake and you multiply them. So instead of getting 3 plus 4 equals 7, you get 3 plus 4 equals 12, which is really 3 times 4. Well, the same thing in the system of divine metaphysics. You cannot be working on a demonstration if you don't know what the Word is and the Christ is. You can't do it. You're going to be a failure. There are the majority of people that have been taught in Christian Science never use a system. What fools they are. How ignorant they are. If they would only read page 146 that I've quoted in this recording several times, Mary Baker Eddy says that that's what Christian Science is, a system. You cannot have two different or three different people have a healing on the same problem unless you use a system. You can't get 3 times 4 equals 11. Everybody that multiplies 3 times 4 has to get 12. Otherwise, you got two different people or three different people coming up with 3 different products, 3 different solutions. You can't have 3 different solutions when the factors are the same. You have to have a system. You have to have a principle that you're following. Most people don't have any idea that Mary Baker Eddy gave us a system. A system. Wow. What a mistake. What a mistake. Well, anyway, here at the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, we teach the system through our treatments. Okay? And we also have a number of publications, like the ones referred to from Ralph Witzke, that teach the system. Most people want to have their hand held, and they progress better if they do that. That's why we offer these treatments. We do our best to be totally honest and true in everything we say. And we recommend doing what I'm going to do right now, and that is that at the end of every treatment, you should say that there can be nothing that can interfere with this treatment. There can't be anything that can reduce the capacity, the capability, the functionality. Nothing can interfere. Nothing can do anything to reduce the power of truth in this treatment. It can't be stopped and it can't be reversed because God is the only power. There is no opposing power. There is no opposing force. Everything is God. There is nothing but God. God is all in all source, all manifestation. I know this to be true because God is all-knowing, and I am a reflection of God. And this truth, the truth in this treatment, is a reflection of the truth of God. Amen.